Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my series from Venice Immersive 2025, today's episode is with a piece called Relaunching Luigi Broglio. So this was actually the winner of the Biennale College Cinema Immersive, where there's a number of different pieces that do this incubator. And then there's a number of different college Biennale cinema pieces that are shown each year at Venice Immersive. And then there's one that is a winner, and that means they get funding to actually produce it. And so what's interesting is in this conversation with Vincenzo is this kind of like theatrical way that they staged it within this more of a theater production, but using 360 video and kind of stitched between these two scenes to go back and forth between the past and the present. And so we talk a lot around the affordances between 360 video versus 180 video, some of the differences between the affordances of those two and what you're able to do in each of those. And so overall, the piece is around Luigi Broglio, who was based in Italy, but then he went to Africa to be able to help kickstart this space exploration. Apparently, Italy was like the third into space, but it's not a story that's as well known as like the Russians or the United States. So there's this character that basically lived from November 1911 to January 2001. And so we're going back in time as if he was still alive telling his story. And so we're getting a chance to learn a little bit about the history. Vincenzo himself is somebody from Italy who's living in Africa. And so he's also made previous experiences mostly around telling African stories. And so he's in this place of also reckoning with what's it mean to look at these different colonial dynamics between like who gets to tell what stories. And so he's deciding to tell this story in particular because he is from Italy and he is telling a story of this prominent figure from Italian history who happened to go to Africa to kickstart this whole space exploration on the equator for Italy. But also at the time, Luigi Broglio was also dealing with different aspects of colonialism and capitalism as well. And so that's also integrated into the story itself. And so the different contextual domains that are explored are space exploration, you know, in the context going into a foreign African country relative to the main character's home of Italy. And then there's various conflicts and various institutional entities that are in conflict, but also like looking at the impact of capitalism and colonialism, and also his career and profession, kind of retrospective of the major turning points, as well as his home in Italy, and juxtaposing between these two worlds within the context of this piece. So the major center of gravity elementally is the water element in terms of the emotional presence of like using actual cinematic 360 video. It's actually like theatrically staged, a little bit more of the earth element in terms of like the spatial context is allowing you to kind of project your imagination to kind of fill in a lot of the gaps. And so that's, I guess, a feature of theater is that it's not always kind of fleshed out fully, the different spatial contexts, but you get this major split between like one half of the 180 video is this journalist who's interviewing Luigi Broglio. And then he basically walks through the door to be able to go to the other side. And then you actually have to literally kind of flip around to see going into the past to tell more and more of these aspects of the story. And so, like I said, it's very much theatrical stage. The second set of gravity is the earth element of the theatrical staging. It's very much like watching a play, but also very accessible for people to see and see this playing within the context of different cultural institutions in Italy to be able to tell this aspect of the history and the story. It also has this kind of interesting split spatially between looking in one direction is the contemporary present of sorts of when Luigi Broglio was still alive, even though, you know, technically we're still looking into the past. But then you turn around and then you end up going into these flashback scenes. And so there's no real cuts. You just kind of like turn your body. And as you turn your body, you go into these different scenes. And it's almost like changing the scenes, but you're doing that through this one direction seems to be the present. And then you turn around and it ends up being the past, which is kind of a nice conceit. And then as the viewer, you don't have any agency narrative, but you are turning around and you could, I guess, suppose not turn around and like just see the scene change and some of the cuts that are actually happening in the context there. But otherwise, you're moving your body in order to keep up with the editing and the pacing of the piece. And most of the narrative is being transmitted through this conversation and these dialogue as you're listening to these characters interacting with each other. Some of the major themes and archetypal character, lots of different power dynamics and structures of capitalism and colonialism. He says in the description, quote, the explosive encounter with giant Enrico Mattei, a near diplomatic crisis with President Nasir, and also, quote, time to rediscover Italian colonial and post-colonial history through fresh eyes. And also, this saga proves to be the most impossible dreams ignite into reality when courage meets creativity and determination. So it's a lot about the memory and looking in the past and colonialism. And then, quote, two prisoners of fading memory trapped in the ghostly command center of Kenya's San Marco space station. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Vincenzo happened on Monday, September 1st, 2025, at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
My name is Vincenzo Cavallo. I'm a director, producer. I'm also an academic researcher. And I've been working in the immersive industry since 2019. I have done my first VR interactive film, which is called African Space Makers, that went in competition in 2020 here at the Venice Film Festival, immersive section, of course. And then the piece went very well. It won the Lumiere Award. It got the XR Master Award. And then after that, I concentrated on a different project because I also do linear cinema. I also do documentaries. So I worked on a movie, which took a lot of time, a lot of energy, which came out in 2023 and is currently still on Netflix. It's called Buffy's Daydreamers. It's a movie about scamming the US visa process, and it's based on a true story. It's a Somali-Kenyan film. And then after finishing Buffy's Daydreamers, I started to work on several other projects based more on my identity as an Italian who migrated to Africa, in specific in East Africa and Kenya. So I went there when I was 26. Now I'm 46 almost. So you can imagine, like, majority of my adult life, it's been happening in Kenya. My career has been built in this very peculiar environment of being a white person in a black country and dealing with all the structural injustice and post-colonial things. And despite all, I mean, like, I was able to build a company that has produced many films, many documentaries. But, you know, this issue of identity was coming back. So people were questioning always, like, why are you telling Somali stories? Which is, now the narrative, the dominant narrative is that you have to belong to a specific community to tell the story of that community, which is a narrative that emerged as a reaction to the disproportional representation of a certain ethnic group, white people, telling stories of other community. And therefore, it makes sense. But from my perspective, it also makes sense that people from different communities tell stories of other communities because they bring in different perspectives, and I really like that. But because of, you know, so many different social, economical and cultural issues, I decided now to have a deep thought about my role as an author in Africa. And then this let's say problem or limitation was good in a way, because it helped me to think. And I was thinking, like, okay, we have a story, a history actually, 100 years of colonialism in East Africa. We have a lot of migrants, we have a lot of different people which for different reasons from Italy went to East Africa to do something. And some of these people were good people, some of these people were bad people. Of course, I like to focus on the good ones because I like to do inspirational pieces. Anyway, but so that's how I came across the story of Luigi Broglio. The story of Luigi Broglio is really, truly an incredible story. And I always start the pitch of this piece by saying, how come that the Russian people remember very well the person behind Sputnik? How come American people remember very well the people behind Apollo or other space mission? How come Italians don't remember Luigi Broglio? And we are the third nation that sent satellites in orbit in 1964 from the US, and then we did it again in 1967 from Kenya, because we built an equatorial base. Luigi Broglio built an equatorial base, the first equatorial base on a marine platform. Why? Because he understood that by launching from below the equator on a marine platform, there were a whole series of advantages. But I'm not going in detail because this is more about immersive stories. But like, to cut it short, he did something incredible with very little money and with a team of genius. They are remembered as the San Marco boys. And so my piece, it's dedicated to him. It's dedicated to his memory. And it's called Relaunching Luigi Broglio, because the idea is to bring the audience through a whole journey that ends with a psychomagic act. I don't know if you know what psychomagia is, but it's, for the people who don't know, it means that you reenact something that happened in the past. Why are you doing that? You're doing that in order to reflect, to heal a wound sometimes. And I think this is like healing a wound of Italian history, because this man is incredibly important, like, for so many reasons. And, you know, he represents the spirits of Italy in the 50s, 60s, which was the spirit of reconstructing a country that came out from the Second World War, torn apart, with a very bad reputation, because very bad political choices were made. And, yeah, maybe, like, you want to... You. I mean, I think I spoke a lot now. Maybe you can ask a question. Sorry about...
I think that gives a lot of context as to aspects of your journey into the space. But you mentioned you did some academic research. And before we start to dive more into the specifics of the story that you're telling, I'd love to hear a bit more context as to your background, all the different design disciplines that you're coming from. Sounds like you're coming from cinema, but also doing various different types of research. So, yeah, just love to hear a little bit more context as your background and your journey into VR.
Thank you for asking. So my background is... I did a career in communication studies. I studied media studies, and then I did a PhD in media studies. That's how I ended up in Kenya, because I was a kind of a small, let's say, gig prodigy child. So I was the first one who created like a e-democracy platform at the beginning of the 2000s. And then my Italian professor connected me with the UN program, and then this UN program sent me to Africa, to Nairobi, to help build the e-democracy platform for different African parliaments. So I worked on that project, and while working on that project, I wrote my PhD thesis. But I think there was always in me this dream of trying to do cinema, documentaries. It started with documentaries, very adventurous one. I did like Mungiki, the Mafia of Kenya. I did the Pirates. I did, you know, I was just jumping everywhere, trying to experience as much as possible, going on helicopters, stuff like that. And so like our company somehow became sustainable because, you know, Kenya in 2007... came out from a long period of authoritarian regime. So like the system opened up, more companies came in. I mean, now it's an incredible country. We have thousands of productions, thousands of video makers. Everyone is a gig. There is also an incredible immersive ecosystem. But at that time, we had this advantage of coming from Europe with a bit of knowledge. So I think it was a win-win situation. We created this company, we did so many things. But I always kept writing. I published a paper about XR in Africa and the relationship between XR and public space. Because I realized when we did the African Space Makers, I realized that in other four countries around Africa, there were some other people doing similar things about public space. So there was a project called The Occupation, and I'm sure you remember about it in South Africa. There was a project in Lagos. There was a project in Ghana. There was a project in Senegal. All these projects were dealing with the imaginary of the city and the idea of boundaries within post-colonial urban spaces. So I wrote an article about, I published it. We did some talks on MIT, Open Doc Lab. Yeah, that's my background. So I have a bit of, I keep doing research and writing about, I think it's a way for me also to understand what I'm doing, you know, and why am I doing it? Like, and again, now that I have started approaching this, let's say, post-colonial cultural heritage of Italians in East Africa, to somehow save my soul from the idea that I'm a white person telling the story of black people. So now I'm an Italian person telling the story of Italian people in Africa. So I feel like, okay, that's all good. According to the contemporary narrative, I'm in the right place. And I think, by the way, and I say that without any, how do I say, I'm not trying to be smart or cynical. I'm just saying, like, there are narratives that can really shape the work that authors are doing. Us as authors, we don't just wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to tell this story because I have to. You know, we think also like, okay, if I tell this story, what's going to happen? What is the criticism that I can attract and what are the risks I'm going to take? And it's true, we shall all be free to tell the story we want to tell. But it's also true that there is an over-representation of a certain ethnic group telling stories of other ethnic groups. So the truth relies a bit on the context. What's your relationship with the story? And I really feel this story of Luigi Broglio, it's untapping so many things, like the niece of Luigi Broglio came to see the piece. People are just... somehow the piece I'm making, it's becoming a way to bring people together. People who are connected to the heritage of Luigi Broglio, because they all feel the same. For example, I met the daughter of a person who worked for Luigi Broglio, and she feels the same thing. She feels like this generation of Italian men who were very religious, very straight, very old-fashioned, they felt showing off was almost a sin. So they were doing these things and they were just keeping quiet. They would not even talk about in their own family. So these people are kind of rediscovering what they did. They are digging into their story. And then there are other thousands of political issues why this story did not come out and why some people may not be happy that this story comes out. But I'm not going to go into details because this is more about immersive. So, yeah.
Maybe it's a good time to move into the journey into taking this project to the Biennale College Cinema Immersive and how that came about and what you were really workshopping in terms of the end result that's showing here is it's like a 360 video that you have two sides of kind of split down the middle of these two different worlds that really gave this context for theatrical staging of telling the story. It felt like I was watching a play or a theater show, but in the context of a 360 video. So just love to hear a little bit more about the process of taking it and workshopping it and getting feedback. And yeah, just a little bit more about that part of the journey. Yeah.
So, you know, we won the Biennale College Cinema Immersive Production Award. So we won this award, right? It was amazing. It was an amazing journey because we came to Venice just with an idea. Actually, at the beginning, the name was The Fantastic Story of Luigi Broglio. But in a theater play or in a story, you need an antagonist. You need something to happen. So the whole psychomagic act, the whole idea of the journalist who becomes an antagonist, it was there, but, you know, the tutors just made it come all together in the right shape and in the right form. Even the title, Relaunching Luigi Broglio, doesn't come from me. It comes from one of my tutors. She said something like, oh, so you want to relaunch Luigi Broglio or something like that. And I said, like, wow, that's the title, you know. So it was really an important process, and I'm really grateful to Biennale College Cinema Immersive. I'm not saying that because I got the award, but it's truly, I mean, what you can do in 3 years, they manage to make you do it, like, in a very short time. However, you have to come up with an idea that is feasible, that is realistically, you know, something that you can produce within a time frame and with that funds, right? So you have to dig into your superpowers and think like, okay, what am I good at? If I tell you I don't have experience with CGI and I don't have experience with animations. So even though it would have been really cool to do a whole animation about Luigi Broglio, that was a process. I don't have the time to learn about that process in such a short time. So we digged into our superpowers and we are storytellers. We did documentaries, we did feature films, And you know, what we know is how to deal with the scenographer, how to deal with actors, locations. This is what we know. So we came up with an idea that was simple to execute and that is accessible to a large public, because we also didn't want to do this as an artistic piece. We want to do this as an historical, scientific, divulgative piece, but always using our style. So a bit fun. I mean, we always do this. We do crime comedies. We like to make people laugh, if possible, about important topics. So that's our style. That's what we know how to do. And that's what I hope we did. So to cut it short, we produced an immersive piece which doesn't have even one CGI. It doesn't even have a digital text, if you have noticed. Like nothing, except, of course, the credits at the end. Everything has been built. All the scenography has been built. We only dealt with actors, and we did this in a very, you know, theatrical. It's a theater. It's a theater, and we didn't have money to rent a big theater. So, like, the stage that you see in front of you is the same stage you see behind you. So it's a small theater with two doors, one on the left and one on the right, and the characters pass through these doors, and in reality, you're passing from a shot to another shot, and it's basically 280 stitched to each other. So I think it was, I do understand that, you know, in this context, it may look a bit, I don't know, there are pieces that are way more complicated and technologically advanced, and some people may even think like, okay, except the fact that I'm turning around to pass from one side of the theater to the other side of the theater, why is this piece immersive? And my answer to this is, number one, I think we should stop asking this question. It's a stupid question. Like, you don't have to do something immersive. You can decide to do something immersive because you feel like this is something that can be interesting to experiment. This is something that can work. This is something you like aesthetically. Personally, I feel this act of moving and turning, it's really cool because these are flashbacks. And so you have to actually physically turn and watch your back to understand what happened back in history. But it's not necessary. I think nothing is necessary. You know, we could have but books have been written. We are working now on the feature film. Documentary have been made. This is kind of fun. Like, I think for, you know, between 12 years old and any age, like, you can watch it in a museum. Maybe, like, while you also have other material to explain in details what happened. And it's the history of it's our history. So it's a very, I think it's a very good product for museums. In fact, we already raised interest from museums, and that's exactly what we want to do. Because also when you come up with these amazing ideas as an author, there are two ways you can approach this. You can say, okay, I produce a piece exactly the way I want, and I go to Biennale Venice, and then, you know, I win an award, and then, you know, I'm going to go to a couple of other exhibitions, but that's it. You know, you're not serving a political or social, and it's fine. I mean, like, it's completely fine. I mean, art inspires, art is experimentation, but for us, we didn't approach this as artists. We approached this as storytellers that wanted to produce a piece that had a specific target and that would go in museum. And we hope that this network of museum that we will build through this piece will be then a network that we can use to produce another piece. And maybe this means also that we want to do things that are a bit more accessible. We want to be pop. We want to bring comedy into the VR. VR usually is very dark. Like, if you see most of the pieces here are very sad, existential. They talk about mental diseases, or they're talking about existential problems or psychological problems. And it's fine. Again, I'm not saying it should not be like this. I'm just saying, like, sometimes you look at something and then you think like, oh, look, this is missing. I can do this because it's not there, or maybe it's not represented as the other things. So I think our contribution to the immersive world, it's a good contribution. You know, we have this idea of popularizing it to make pieces that are easy. You know, I had in mind like to make a piece that my mom could watch. You know what I mean? In fact, my mom came, she watched it. At the end, she said, like, and then I brought her to different experiences, and she was like, you know, your experience is one of the few that I really understood. And then she said, like, you know, not because you are my son, but like, I found that other experiences were very different. So again, how do we deal with the issue of creating immersive experience for everyone? Do we really need to add interaction? And if we need to add interaction, what kind of interaction? Because I have seen pieces in which you do interact, but I don't understand the meaning of this interaction. It feels like a bit like that because technology allowed us to do something, then we feel the obligation of doing something with that. While I think, yeah, relaunching Luigi Broglio, it's, I think, was appreciated by the jury of the Biennale College exactly because it was very simple. And this simplicity, I feel it's something needed in the immersive world. I think simplicity can help this market, this sector, to go further. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just a follow-on clarifying question, because you created this 360 video. You said that there was a movie and documentary in the works or had finished. Is that something that you're also working on, or is that something that other people have worked on, movies and documentaries about Luigi Broglio?
So there are documentaries that came out on the TV. Our national broadcaster did a documentary, some TV programs, but I haven't seen a really good documentary about that. But documentaries are out there, TV documentary, not cinema documentary. And now I'm working on the film. Actually, I was working on the film before starting the immersive. The immersive came out because when the call came out, somehow a Kenyan friend of mine was like, Vincenzo, you shall apply. I think your idea, he knew the idea I was working on. He said, I think your idea could be cool. Why don't you apply? And then, you know, like once you work on the immersive piece, then one thing leads to the other. And this is exactly what happened because we got in touch with the person who wrote the book about Luigi Broglio, because Luigi Broglio, when he was 88, 1 year before dying, he just let everything out. Not everything, but he let a lot of things. You know, he was a military and he was a scientist and he was a Catholic, never married, never had a family, very special character. So he kept quiet until dying, and then he just published this interview book. I read this interview book, I contacted the author, and, you know, I hired the author to do a consultancy for, you know, make sure like what we did, it's somehow approved by him. And then he calls me one day and he says, like, you know, there are some people who won a fund to develop the movie and they are looking for a director. So I'm like, yo, this is really interesting, you know, how life goes. And again, this is also, and I'm not trying to say what's wrong or what's right. I'm just telling you my story. And again, I think there is a different approach that people who come from storytelling and, you know, working on documentaries or working on feature films have when it comes to VR or immersive. Like, for me, I don't see, like, I can't understand why you would define yourself as, like, an immersive film director. That would not make any sense to me, like, because films, feature films or immersive stories, you need to have the same capacity of sharing emotion, make someone understand the story. And I think if you make immersive films or even video games without that approach, you may end up doing something very boring. So I think at the end of the day, what really counts, what's always at the bottom of all the experience, shall be storytelling, which doesn't mean one character, the arc. No. Storytelling, it's more than that. But, you know, like, there must be something, like a need, an urgency to share a story, to share a story of a character, to share your own story, to share a story that matters.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear you elaborate a little bit on the fact that you shot it as like a 360 video, but essentially it's like 180 that's stitched together. I'm just curious if you thought around just making it a 180 video and cutting rather than having people turn around, and some of the different thought process there of making it like a fully spatial experience rather than just like a forward-facing 180 video.
So, to be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of 180 videos because I see that the narrative with 180, like for example, I've watched Submerge, which is amazing, right? Quality, you know, Apple Vision Pro, And I get the concept, but I'm asking myself, if that's what I want to have, like, wouldn't it be cooler to go to a cinema with a big screen? I would get pretty much the same experience, right? Yeah, you can have that experience with Apple Vision Pro at home. Fine, cool. But I don't see 180 as something particularly exciting to me, because, like, I mean, it's, I don't know, maybe it's because I come from the early Oculus Go, you know, like, my first instinct is to look around, you know, and if I start to see all black right and left and the back, then I'm wondering, like, why do I have to wear these terrible headsets, you know, which are, like, so confining. And yeah, I'm like, everyone is putting a lot of attention on this 180 thing. I think, to be honest with you, I wish I could have shoot this in 180. Because I think what is really cool is to shoot with the 180 technology, because even if you shoot 360, at the end of the day, most of the time you are behind, or in general, shooting 180 makes more sense. You can use these cameras with the double lenses instead of going crazy, stitching an incredible amount of data. So I think the technology of the 180 is really cool. I think the end product is less cool, but people say it's really cool because they don't want to use the 360 camera because it's a lot more complications. Now, the thing is, how can we make 360 video using 180 technology? Because I wanted to use the 180 technology, but then there was a risk of having distortion on both sides. So if the market could produce cameras that can, let's say, do 220 without distortion, 230 without distortion, that would be super cool. Because honestly, we shoot with the Kandao Obsidian Pro and it was a nightmare. Like, I wouldn't recommend using that camera to anyone. I mean, like, we shoot 12K RAW, 60 frames per second, which, by the way, you should not do, but the camera allows you to do it. First problem. So then they had to basically bring it to 6K RAW, 60 FPS per second, because the camera doesn't really record 12K RAW FPS. So it's something like stretched cam out of it, which they had to fix. So Kandao, please fix this problem, because, you know, that was really a nightmare. Plus, we produce like a terabyte per minute, because I wanted to have like the maximum quality. At the end of the day, we exported, I think, a 4K per eye. I mean, now I think we have another version, which is like 5.7, which is the maximum that... And obviously, with more work, we can do an adaptation for the Apple Vision Pro. And, you know. But how cool would have been to shoot this with a normal camera, with like... You know, like, they have invented this stereoscopic lenses. I'm wondering if they could invent like a camera which, like, a lens that with three lenses, so that it's easier than to stitch, because then you can have three in the front and then you do three in the back, so you have like six, like in a normal, well, no, like, I think the Kandao Obsidian Pro has eight. Anyway, to answer your question, I think 180 cameras are really cool. And 180 technology is really cool. I don't think 180 films are really cool. But I think we can use 180 technology to create 360 video. That would be really cool and would open up a lot of opportunities for video makers that don't have big resource. And most probably it's not even the resource, the time to stitch this material. It's crazy, you know, like the data management. So we need to work on that.
Yeah, just coming from the VR industry and watching a lot of pieces over the last 11 to 12 years, I think my experience was that we started with 360 video because that's what everyone was producing. Then, you know, there was some stuff with, you know, when YouTube launched, they went to 180 as a format because it was just easier to produce. But then also when the Apple Vision Pro came out, my take in some ways is that when you do 180 video, you are expected to not move your head around. In fact, you're penalized if you move your head around because then you, if you turn too far, then you see the edge and it breaks the illusion that you're there. But with 180 video, you can do a lot more editing because you have your attention that is generally, you know, where people are going to be looking at. So you can do a little bit more stylized editing. So it leans a little bit more on the cinematic tradition, where I think the 360 video leans a little bit more in the theatrical tradition because it's about pointing attention. And so because you're shooting more of a theatrical thing.
Yeah, I completely agree with you 100%. Actually, I didn't think about it. The answer is it's 180 can give birth to a new form of cinema, which is what I have seen with Submerge, which doesn't impress me so much because the feelings I have, the emotion I have are very similar to the emotions I have with linear cinema. Although, of course, if you are alone at home and you are using the Apple Vision Pro, somehow it's more accessible than going to huge screen, but you can have that emotion by watching it on a huge screen with high definition. The big thing that you have just touched is exactly that the 360 somehow gives you this feeling of a theatrical experience. And that's exactly why I thought I'm going to use theater as a form of expression and bring theater inside the VR. And I didn't know exactly what to expect because most of the things I've seen before were more than theater, were experimental theater things, you know, like Quintero stuff, you know, and those things are very abstract, you know, like I wanted to do a theater piece that it's easy to watch for everyone, like almost like a theater piece that you could watch as an end of the year of school play where you see your son, you know, playing. And I don't know what you think personally, but I think this is something that is worth exploring more because it really works. Like, okay, I put the two doors, but if I had resources, I would have rented a big warehouse and then I would have positioned the camera under the roof and then I would have changed position of camera and then I would have done something like Dogville of Lars von Trier, you know, or you can come up with very cool theatrical idea. I think you're totally right. I think 360 can revive theater in a way. I think it's something that can work out.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, some of the pieces I saw at South by Southwest with 180 video, there's a piece called Currents that was a very character-driven story. So I feel like sometimes a 360 video I've seen in the past really telling a story of a place. And so you're grounded into the place and it's a 360. Whereas like the 180, I've found that you could do like close-ups in a way that don't work as well with 360 video. So you end up having more latitude to do character-driven stories. But, you know, you're doing a character-driven story, but you're doing it in a very theatrical context. And the place, you actually kind of have this hemispheric split between one side, which is the journalist doing the interview and the kind of more the antagonistic character. And then the other side is the travels to Africa or other locations. And so you have Luigi Broglio, who's going back and forth between these two contexts, walking through these doors, sort of breaking the fourth wall, but not really. He's kind of going between, it's a close thing to a cut, I guess, going from one scene to the next.
Basically, it's like a cut. It's a form of cut. But I think, again, you are right when you say that one, it can be more character-driven, one, it's a more space-driven. I can't agree more. And you see, now when it comes to theater, like the whole theater, the whole good theater, the character and the space interact in a different way because we don't expect the camera to go closer, right? Because when we go to theater, usually we sit on a chair and, you know, that's where we look from that perspective. We don't expect to go close, to go... In a way, I feel like, you know, when you watch theater experience in TV, you know, this TV theater. I don't know if you ever watch TV theater. It's kind of popular in Italy, by the way, to, you know, take an old theater play and, you know, you make it into a TV show. It's for TV, no? But funny enough, if you see how directors work on those pieces, they never like zoom in, zoom out too much. Because when you look at the theater, you have, the space has a different meaning, right? In fact, I think in our piece, I'm really happy about the scenography. And I'm really happy about the fact that this scenography defines the space, even though it's like few pieces, but you know, they are all handmade. So I think you're making me think about something which is very important, which is the relationship between the set design and the character in theater is very important. Like, I think in Rilancio Luigi Broglio, the set design plays such a big role. And I wanted it to be like this. I mean, if I had more resources, I would have done it even more. In fact, at the beginning, I thought about having in the back the people building the set. But then it would have been too much data. Like, we couldn't process. We spent like $5,000 just for hard disks. You know, it's insane. So we had to actually, if you notice, we have done loops in the back because we wanted to reduce the amount of data. But if I had money and if I could go back, I wouldn't have shoot this in 12K RAW with the Kanda Obsidian Pro. Maybe I would have used something lighter and I would have done what was in my mind, which was doing something like Wes Anderson style, you know, with like the set moving, the things coming in and out. And I think, yeah, I think for someone who likes Wes Anderson shorts, like the last shorts he did on Netflix, I don't know if you have watched them, like, what's the name? The Wonderful Story of Mr. You know, that billionaire who was able to see through the cards.
Yeah. Roland Dahl?
Sugar, Mr. Sugar, I think. Anyway, yeah, I mean, like, I think I want to do other things like that. I think I have kind of tapped into something, and I really want to explore more about how to use 360 in the theater context. And this time I have used this very simple thing of the doors because of the resources, but in the future maybe I'd like to be able to work like in a big warehouse where I can do theater with less limitation. Yeah,
and you shared a little bit about your own story of going to Kenya, and Luigi Broglio is also going to Kenya and has connections to Kenya, and in the piece you actually are cutting back and forth between him doing the interview and then on these different excursions into these different places. And as you turn around, then you are changing the set. And at one time I didn't turn around. I saw it make a cut, you know, because you are playing with this change blindness of having the seamless transitions that when you go back and forth, that allows you to, you know, have like the equivalent of the curtain falling and then changing it, but you're using the fact that you're turning around in the 360 video to change all the sets. Like you said, you were wanting to have it more dynamic or have that like a live change. But just curious if you could talk around how going in between the two hemispheres in the 360 video was a metaphor for Luigi Broglio going onto this journey onto these different places, and maybe you could just explain the different places that he's going throughout the context of the piece.
I think, as I said to you, it's a metaphor because our life is a cycle, right? It doesn't go like a straight line. We move around and around and around. And plus, there is another metaphor which I've been thinking later about the satellites, which is this round thing. And then again, another metaphor is that the hurt. So, I mean, somehow we have this 360 dimension embedded in us as an element of nature that re-manifests itself in different ways, around the tables, around the hearth. I mean, so like you can find so many meanings to this. For me, when I look at the piece, I just think like it works because it defines spatially a narrative element. So it divides the command room from the flashbacks. So it helps you by physically turning your brain somehow, it's helped, like you feel a bit like you are doing the journey with the character. or at least I hope that this is the feeling. Like all the ideas, sometimes we do things we don't even know why we are doing them, you know. Like I think I came out with this idea primarily because I had somehow to make this piece immersive. My main objective is not to make an immersive piece. My main objective is to talk about the history of Italy in Africa, and specifically now for this project about the story of Luigi Broglio. That's my main mission. Now, if I step into the immersive field, I have to think how I can format this story for this specific medium. And then I will go into the feature film, and then I will have to think how to make it the story for that specific media. And you know, if we are doing a podcast, we have to think how do we make it for this specific. And that's why I'm saying, for me, I don't understand people who stick to one media unless they are technician. If they are technician, yes, I understand, because you have to know how it works, this and that. But if there are people who want to tell a story, nothing should stop them, you know. Actually, I think it's so beneficial to pass from a medium to another medium, because it really brings you back to the essence of what you're doing, which is to tell a story.
Yeah, and there's something also very poetic of the way that you're having the command room be a part of the installation that you're walking into. It's part of the magic circle that as you enter in, then you're seeing the present day interview happening in the command room. And then every time you turn, you're going back in time. And so there's a way that the body motion as you turn 180 degrees to see the other side of the hemisphere of the 360 video, then you're kind of going back into another time. So every time you're turning, you're also, that motion is representing time in the context of the story.
The clock, right? Also the clock is making that. Sorry, I interrupt you. Continue.
Oh, no. And also another sphere that is in the installation is the actual satellite that's in there is a sphere that has all sorts of lines. But yeah, as you move, you kind of move through time. Yeah. You're saying about the clock?
Look, I'm just an humble storyteller / video producer who is trying to do things with limited budgets and limited amount of time. I like to take this opportunity to tell you what I would have done if I had more budget and more, because just to make you understand my intention, yeah? So we built all this set design, which now lies into a basement somewhere, and we were able to bring here only the command room and the satellites, which, by the way, I think it's a really cool installation, because most of the installation don't have so many elements that you can touch. And therefore, one thing I would have done if I had time and money is to actually get a big warehouse. The big warehouse comes back in my dream, or a big space where you can put all these elements that you find in the theater piece. And maybe you can watch the play in chapters, and also interact with the physical piece. And again, it's a way to bring people back to the magic of theater, in essence, because the magic of theater, at the end of the day, is still one of the most beautiful medium, right? I mean, it's one of the oldest, and I think the actors did an amazing job. Like, I don't know, I got these actors because originally, I'm from a place called Napoli, which is in the southern of Italy, and has like a very like strong theater tradition. So I got like amazing actors for a very reasonable amount of money, and they were great. Like one of the actors, I don't know if you noticed Tristano, not Luigi, Tristano, he moves with his body all the time. Yeah, and so these movements creates an interaction with the space you are in. You wouldn't move like that in a cinematic film, right? So again, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to please you, but like what you said before about the 360 is really about interacting with the space. That's the key. And 180, it's more like a normal film. It's character driven. The only difference is that you get like a much better resolution. You're like, wow, this is so cool. But really, when you are dealing with 360, you must reflect about the relationship between the person who experienced that piece you are making and the space. It's all about that. And I think in theater, that relationship is very important. When you go into a theater, the lighting, the atmosphere, the noise of the steps on the wood, and all of that. There is an amazing guy, Omar Rashid. This guy also helped me a lot. He's also a very famous VR producer here in Italy. He actually inspired me so much because he's the one who started to do VR theater in Italy. So, yeah.
Great. And finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of virtual reality and different forms of immersive storytelling, what that ultimate potential might be and what it might be able to enable?
Okay, I think this question is very difficult to answer. And you know that. If I want to answer this question seriously, it would be very difficult. But let's say I look at VR, it's not something that applies only to storytelling. Like, I'm a storyteller, and I want to use VR to tell stories. But VR is not just about telling stories. VR is about helping people with traumas. It's about anesthetic for people who cannot take chemical substance. It's capacity building. It's everything. So, you know, what's the future of VR? The future of VR is our future. You know what I mean? Like, it's gonna be in everything we are doing more and more and more. And how do I say? I'm not particularly worried about how long it's gonna take to get there. And also, I'm not really worried about what's going to replace or not, because I don't think it's going to replace anything. It's just gonna add another layer to our existence. Of course, when that layer will be added, just like AI, then we will have to be careful. You know, once you have access to a lot of food, you have to be careful not to get too fat or not to get a disease. You know, it's the usual. I mean, it's common sense, right? So I can answer to the questions like, what can VR do for me as an artist and how can I use it in the future? And the answer is, I think I would like to experiment more with urban spaces, going back to my work with urban spaces, because I think it's phenomenal to do that. And also, I think maybe also experiencing with theater again would be really nice. And honestly, I don't know what the future will bring, and because I think the superpower of an artist is to be open, and, you know, like, if something happens and something comes to us, we need to be able to listen and to, you know, welcome. So my answer is, I don't know.
Awesome. Well, I just wanted to thank you so much for joining me here on the podcast today, because I think this discussion, I think, was very illuminating in the sense of, like, really clarifying for maybe both of us the role of space and 360 video and theater, and the way that sometimes the format of, like, 180 video or even a film, you kind of expect, like, a certain kind of rhythm or cutting. And, like, with 360 video, there's less of that demand around how much edits that you have. And then you have more of a spaciousness to let something unfold within the context of a space, and gives you a deeper sense of being there. And, like, we were talking around just the traditions of theater, maybe more suited towards 360 video rather than 180. And yeah, just really fascinating to see how you were implementing that in your piece, and really enjoyed the discussion to kind of help piece all those things together. So thanks again for joining me today to help break it all down.
Thanks so much. I feel I had a conversation with my professor when I was doing my PhD. You really helped me to rationalize this also. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage. And hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep, in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it and allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening. Thank you.